Punah Yam Yam Shakti Mupashitya Kuru Shakti Parapuman Yathagopayate Vibhur Yathasam Yachate Punah Yam Yam Shakti Mupashitya Kuru Shakti Parapuman Kindly describe how the Supreme Lord, who is all-powerful, engages his different energies and different expansions in maintaining and again winding up the phenomenal world in the sporting spirit of a player. Purport by His Divine Grace, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. In the Katha Upanishad, the Supreme Lord is described as the chief eternal being amongst all other eternal individual beings. Nityo Nityanam Chetanas Chetananam. And the one Supreme Lord who maintains innumerable other individual living beings. Eko Bahunam Yo Vadadati Kaman. So all living entities, both in the conditioned state and in the liberated state, are maintained by the Almighty Supreme Lord. Such maintenance is effected by the Lord through His different expansions of self and three principal energies, namely the internal, external, and marginal energies. The living entities are His marginal energies, and some of them, in the confidence of the Lord, are entrusted with the work of creation also, as are Brahma, Marichi, etc. And the acts of creation are inspired by the Lord unto them, Tene Brahma Vida. The external energy, Maya, is also impregnated with the jivas, or conditioned souls. The unconditioned marginal energy acts in the spiritual kingdom, and the Lord, by His different planetary expansions, maintains them in different transcendental relations displayed in the spiritual sky. So the one Supreme Personality of Godhead maintains Himself in many, Bahusham, and thus all diversities are in Him, and He is in all diversities, although He is nevertheless different from all of them. That is the inconceivable mystic power of the Lord, and as such, everything is simultaneously one with and different from Him by His inconceivable potencies. Achintya Beda Beda Tattva. Maharaj Parikshit is most eager to hear the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Supreme Lord's transcendental potencies are unlimited, and the pastimes which He displays on the basis of those potencies are also unlimited. And for those great souls who have been blessed with the great mercy of the Lord, their eagerness to hear more and more about the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is also unlimited. Maharaj Parikshit was fasting. He was even without sleep. And yet, during the narration of the 10th canto, which is many days into his sleepless fast, he was so enthusiastic, so anxious to hear more and more, that he spoke to Shukadev Goswami that your narration about the Lord is like nectar. Hearing it, I am completely forgetful about eating or sleeping. I am completely satisfied, but I am longing to hear more and more and more. Let this river of transcendental nectar that is flowing from your lotus mouth continue to flow. Here Maharaj Parikshit is beginning his inquiries from Srila Shukadev Goswami. He is asking him to describe how the Supreme Lord creates, maintains, ultimately destroys this entire creation of the phenomenal world, just like a sporting player is performing his athletic activities. For the Lord, it is like a game, creation of this world. It is no effort. For us to survive in this world is such a hard struggle for existence. Just to eat, just to keep a place to sleep, just to maintain your health, it's such a struggle. What to speak of maintaining a family? We all have seen what kind of efforts a person has to do just to provide for his family what is required. We have to commit ourselves to so much incredible amount of anxiety and responsibility, and we have to do so many things we do not like to do. We have to so many times compromise what we really believe we should be doing. It is very difficult. And there is always so much opposition. Whatever your profession may be, whatever your way of life, there will always be antagonistic people trying to disturb you. So much opposition. The elements themselves become opposition. And in this world of so much pollution, our mind is constantly causing us a great struggle. And the weather and the elements, Adiatma, Adidaiva, Adibhotaka, always creating so many problems. Therefore, Krishna says, Mamayvamso jiva bhute jiva bhuta shanantana. Manashashtanindriyani prakriti stani karashati. The living entities are my parts and parcels, and they are struggling very hard in this material existence with their mind and with their senses. So we are jivatmas, and the jivatma is the lord of this body, so to speak. We are giving consciousness to this body. And the tendency of the jivatma that is conditioned by forgetfulness of its relationship with Krishna is the jivatma wants to be the lord of all its surveys. But what is the difference between Krishna and the jivatma? The jivatma, just to exist in this phenomenal world, has to go through so much problem, so much struggle, so much hardship, so much misery and anxiety. Battling against time, against the modes of material nature, against the elements of material nature. It's a struggle, it's a battle. And as soon as we succeed, we can know for sure just ahead is a great failure, a great disappointment. Because it is a world of dualities. And what are we maintaining? What is the glory and greatness of our creation maintenance of this world? We may have a family of four or five, six people, or maybe it's even a very, very rare traditional
arrangement that we have a joint family of even 20 or 30, maybe even 50 people living in our house. People will say, oh, how are you doing this? You are maintaining everyone so nicely. But generally we find everyone's fighting. So much anxiety. And we may have our business, or we may have our government responsibilities, or we may have our industry that we're running, whatever it may be. Brahmacharis may have their locker that they keep locked and protect. In this way, maintenance is a hard struggle. But Krishna is not struggling at all. Krishna is creating the entire cosmic manifestation. Mahavishnu, what is his struggle? If we want to create a little house, we have to work so hard in so many bureaucratic conditions, we have to get so many permits, we have to bribe so many people, otherwise it's impossible these days in Kali Yuga. Just to build a little house, just to get a little property, just to keep a few cows is such a struggle. So much taxes. But when Krishna wants to create, as Mahavishnu, how does he do? He just breathes. Simply breathes. And millions and billions and trillions and quadrillions in unlimited universes start coming out of his pores and his nostrils and everything. And what is his struggle to create all these innumerable universes? He's in yoga nidra. He's sleeping. He doesn't even have to wake up to do it. It's so effortless. Yoga nidra is a mystic sleep. He just exhales. And when we want to destroy something, how much trouble it takes? We have to pay lawyers and courts, and here in India it might take 20 years to somehow or other get rid of your something that is not right. But Krishna, when he wants to destroy all the universes, he just, in his mystic sleep, effortlessly, he just inhales and everything is finished. That is Krishna. When you're sleeping, you can't do anything. Nothing. You can't create anything. You can't destroy anything. You're just like a vegetable, completely useless soul. But Krishna, there's no struggle. And when we want to have children, so much trouble. The father has to go through so much trouble. The mother, she has to hold this little baby in her womb for 9 months. And usually they're always getting nauseous and sick and vomiting. And so many people have to help them. Such a struggle. And the father, he has to deal with her. That's even more of a struggle, from my observation. But when Krishna, and that's for one child, or maybe you may have twins, maybe, and that's even more trouble. For one child, so much energy, so much effort, so much anxiety, so much struggle. But Krishna, when he wants to have children in this material world, he just glances, he just looks for a second. Not that he has to be staring, he just glances for a second. And innumerable billions of quadrillions of unlimited living entities are immediately impregnated within the womb of Mother Nature. And there's no 9 months, immediately. Everything. No anxiety for Krishna. Mother Nature doesn't complain. She just does whatever Father Krishna wants. And then through his various energies, he empowers the various gods and demigods effortlessly. He empowers Brahma, not just one Brahma, but so many billions of Brahmas. The Brahma of our universe, he thinks he's very great. This is tendency. He's the father, the grandfather of everyone. Actually, in India, everyone has pictures of their grandfathers and great-grandfathers in their homes. I have seen sometimes when I go to people's house for prasad. But I never see pictures of Lord Brahma. He's actually the real one. And then Krishna, Mahavishnu. You should all have his picture in your house if you really want to be honest and realistic about your family descendants and ancestors. Anyways, Brahma, he's thinking at one time that I want to see Vishnu. I am doing such great service for him. Because after all, in this whole universe, all living beings have come from me. And I have created all the facilities and all the species of life within this material world. Of course, Krishna is the one, Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, that gave him the power and the knowledge to do it all. But still, he was thinking, let me report to the Lord and tell him what wonderful service I am doing. So he came to the door of the Lord and he said, tell Vishnu that his servant Brahma has come. So Lord Narayan is always anxious to bring his devotees to a higher platform of consciousness. So he told the doorkeeper, ask him which Brahma. Can you imagine saying that to Brahma? If Radha Gopinath Prabhu were to come to my room and tell Raghupati that tell Swamiji that Radha Gopinath wants to talk to him. If he comes back with a message, which Radha Gopinath? Or if Krishnananda comes, Krishnananda Prabhu, tell Swamiji that the president of Pune, Krishnananda Prabhu, wants to see him. And then Raghupati comes back and says, Swamiji is asking, which Krishnananda, from which Pune? He will feel, what? What is this nonsense he's saying? There's only one Krishnananda who's the temple president of Pune. There is no second. So actually you can understand, this is not just a common statement. It's a very great challenge to Brahma's ego. So Brahma replied, it is the four-headed Brahma. Four-headed Brahma. That's the way he presented himself. So the Lord, according to how you approach him, he reciprocates accordingly. He approached him as the four-headed Brahma, because after all, everyone else in this universe only has one head. He's the only four-headed person in this universe that we know of. Yes? He's seeing in all four directions simultaneously. So the Lord said, have him come in. But then as Brahma was coming in, Lord Narayan called for a few other Brahmas. For him, a few others means millions. Millions of Brahmas came. Some had eight heads, some 16, some 32, some 64, some 108, some 200, 300, 400, 500, some 1,000, some 10,000, some 100,000. Some of those Brahmas had millions of heads. Now you may think, how can someone have millions of heads on one body? That is because you have so much trouble just with one head. You're thinking that how can anyone have what a trouble it must be to have more than one head. You have this brain, and this brain is so crazy. You're thinking, how can anyone live with more than one brain? But Brahma's a great soul. He could have millions and millions of heads by Krishna's arrangement. Krishna can create anyone in any way how he likes. That is Krishna's power. And yet, Brahma can have millions of heads and be the most beautiful person you've ever seen. Today in this world, if someone has two heads, they're put in the circus as a freak, and everyone looks at him and says, "Oosh, oosh, look at this. You have seen him." I saw once when I was a little boy, there was a big, in a circus, the person with two heads, and everyone was going, "Oosh, how ugly," and they were looking, people were paying money to just see him and think. In English, it's called a freak. Do you know what freak is? It means someone who's really strange. But Brahma, he has millions of heads in some universes. And yet he's so beautiful. So beautiful. And so aristocratic. And distinguished in his appearance. That everyone wants to bow down and worship him. So when our little Lord Brahma saw so many Brahmas with so many heads, he felt like he was a mosquito in a herd of elephants. He felt insignificant. And yet all those Brahmas were placing however many heads there were, they were placing him on the feet of Lord Narayan. They all understood that he is the supreme cause of all causes. It is by his power that we can speak. It is by his power we can move. He is the controller of all controllers. He is the absolute truth. And then Brahma became very humble and very grateful that the Lord showed him what is his position in relationship to Krishna. And all of the devatas, they are all getting their powers from Krishna. When Krishna appeared in this world, he showed his relationship with the various demigods. Yamaraj, the god of death, when the children, the son of Sandipani Muni, had an early demise. Krishna Balaram offered their Guru Maharaj Dakshin, whatever you like. And actually, when you learn from Guru, it is the tradition you're supposed to give Dakshin. If you do not give Dakshin, it is considered that actually the real relationship is not established. And when one gives dakshin, it shouldn't just be a little ritual. It should actually be something you have to make a sacrifice to provide. It should be a yajna. So when Krishna asked for dakshin, obviously Sandipani Muni wasn't going to say, "You can give me 100 rupees." He has to give Krishna something that he actually has to work for, he has to do something for, something difficult. Dakshin should be something we give with difficulty. It is supposed to be an expression of love for receiving the greatest connection to the previous acharyas and the greatest treasure of knowledge. So he asked Krishna something that nobody else in all of creation could possibly do. He said, "My son had died years ago. I want you to bring him back from the dead and bring him to me." So Krishna Balaram said, "No problem." So ultimately, they went to Yamaraj, the superintendent of death. Everyone is very much afraid of Yamaraj. But when Krishna came to see Yamaraj,
Yamaraj greeted him with a royal reception with all of his opulences. And he worshipped Krishna. He prayed to Krishna. He surrendered to Krishna. And he very gladly, gratefully gave him the son of Sandipani Muni to bring back. So Krishna, when he came to earth, he showed how Yamaraj is his very, very faithful, obedient, loving servant, the god of death. And then there is Varuna. Varuna is the lord of water, the lord of the seas. Most of this earth is ocean. I believe 2/3 of the surface of the earth is water. Therefore, who has the greatest kingdom on this earth? Actually, it is Varuna. He's the lord of all the seas. And as Kali Yuga progresses, according to astrologers and according to prophecies, the seas are going to get bigger and bigger and bigger and consume more and more of the land. And all those towns and cities that are on the coasts may soon be amongst the fish underwater. This is the prophecies coming from all directions, all over the world. In due course of time, the solar ice caps are melting. The levels of water everywhere is growing. So much pollution. The protective layers that are protecting us from the sun are becoming less effective. In this way, there is this greenhouse effect, and the heat is going up on the planet. So there is great dangers and fears. But as far as Varuna is concerned, it's just an expansion of his kingdom on this earth. How great is he? But when Nanda Maharaj was bathing on Dwadasi, at Nandagat in Brajbhumi, he was taken away by Varuna. And the residents of Vrindavan, they asked Krishna, save us. So Krishna went to that beautiful, beautiful kingdom, the capital of Varunadev. And when Varunadev saw Krishna, he immediately stood up, and all sorts of wonderful, pompous celebrations and festivities. And he just surrendered himself with such humility and devotion and surrender at the Lord's feet. And Nanda Maharaj, he didn't understand. To him, Krishna is his son. To him, Krishna is that naughty boy that we have to constantly be watching over to teach him how to do the right thing. And here he is seeing the great Varuna worshipping him. And Krishna said, please give me my father back. And Varuna apologized. I am very sorry. My representatives have made a big mistake by taking him. But I am so fortunate to have your darshan today. And on another occasion, Indra. Indra is the king of heaven. He is the most powerful of the devatas within the region of the Swargaloka. He has his thunderbolt, and he is very, very much worshipped by all the other demigods. And yet, Krishna personally interfered with the puja that was being performed for him during the month of Kartik in Vrindavan. Krishna told the gopas and gopis that you worship Govardhan Hill. What is the use of this Indra? Can you imagine what an insult it was? He told him to worship a mountain instead of the Supreme Lord of Heaven. Huh? A mountain. So Indra was very angry. And he sent torrents of rain, the Samvataka clouds used to destroy the earth. And Krishna is Giridhari. He lifted the Govardhan Hill for 7 days, and not even a, even though there was oceans and oceans and oceans of rain just pouring from the sky, not even one drop could touch Krishna or any of the residents of Vrindavan. This umbrella of Govardhan Hill was so perfectly arranged. And he was throwing his mightiest thunderbolts at Govardhan Hill to try to destroy it. But because it was being touched by Krishna's finger, Govardhan Hill was indestructible. Not only that, but although these thunderbolts that everyone fears of Indra were just crashing upon its surface, because he was feeling the touch of Krishna's finger, that little point of his finger was giving him so much ecstasy that Govardhan didn't even notice the thunderbolts crashing upon him. So ultimately Indra came down and surrendered. "I am very sorry. You are the Supreme Lord. You are the Supreme Master." Indra was working with all his might, with all of his energies and all of his armies, everything to try to somehow cause Krishna anxiety. And Krishna was effortlessly standing with Govardhan Hill. Effortlessly. There was no strain. The little finger of his left hand. That is Krishna. And even Lord Shiva. There's a beautiful story, Shukadeva Goswami. He wanted to reveal the ultimate supremacy of Krishna, once and for all, above all others. Even Lord Shiva, he had a very, very faithful devotee of the name of Banasura. And this Banasura, he was such a demon. He performed such tapasya. And he wanted to please Lord Shiva so much, because he knew if Shiva is pleased, he is Ashutosh, he can give me so many good benedictions that I am indestructible. So he pleased Shiva. Shiva gave him 1,000 arms. Yes? 1,000 arms. So that he could fight. Can you imagine fighting someone with 1,000 arms? And each one of his arms had the power of Shiva behind them. Huh? Now there's these heavyweight boxers. They have 2 arms and the only power they have is the power of their little body. He had 1,000 arms with the power of Shiva in each arm. That means he could shoot 500 bows and arrows at one time with such might, with such strength. And with those 1,000 arms, he was playing drums and Lord Shiva was dancing, because he knew that Lord Shiva likes to dance. He is Nataraj. So just to make him happy, he was playing with all his arms these various drums, and Shiva was dancing so ecstatically. So Shiva is obliged to protect his devotees. So it came the time when there was a war between Krishna and Banasura by divine arrangement. Banasura's daughter was Usha, and Krishna's son was Aniruddha, grandson. So Aniruddha liked Usha very much. And Usha, she had a maidservant, and that maidservant, somehow by her mystic powers, brought Aniruddha into her private chambers. This Usha was so beautiful, and Banasura protected her, that no male ever even saw her. This is how women were protected in those days by great kings. No male's eyes were allowed to even touch the form of a chaste woman in those days. But somehow or other, Aniruddha and Usha were having wonderful sporting pastimes together in the private chambers of Usha's room. And Banasura was given the information, and he came and he saw that she's not the same. She's associating with a man, but what man could possibly be here? And then he came in one day and he saw them together, and he was very angry. Very angry.
And they had a nice fight. And ultimately, it became the cause of a war. And Krishna came with his armies. And Pradyumna, so many. And then Banasura, he called for the help of his lord and master, Shiva. So he was obliged. He came. He came with all his armies, Kartikeya, Ganapati, so many. And Shukadev Goswami describes in wonderful detail this nice war. And who is fighting against who. And ultimately Shiva and Krishna in their battle. Shiva threw his Shivadwara. Yes, Shivadwara. Shivadwara is a weapon that just burns everything. It's very, very hot. It just can burn the entire universe within seconds. That's the power of it. But then Krishna, he was not disturbed. He just sent his Narayana Jwara, which makes everything so cold that it cannot survive. So Srila Prabhupada explains that too much heat is austerity and too much cold is misery. Because when things are really, really hot, you know, people go to sleep and they slow down. But when things become too severely cold, everything stops. We are from the Western countries. Sri Vedavyas Priya Maharaj, he is also from, he has experience. We have seen when there's a cold spell in the winter, everything stops. Nothing can happen. Entire cities, entire states just close down. Just a few years ago, it was so cold. There was so much ice that the telephone and electrical lines, there was so much ice building up that the ice was just so heavy that the lines were just cracking and breaking. And there was power shortages. There was no electricity, no telephones in big cities. And when it's so cold, no engine can start. None of the cars could go. None of the buses could go. None of the trains could go. The airports were completely closed down because there's so much ice on the roads that if you try to walk, you just slip and break your bones. And if you try to drive, you just slide and crash and destroy so many people's lives. No exaggeration. So sometimes, just a couple years ago, I was in Florida, and I was supposed to fly. I was supposed to come to India and catch a flight, if you remember. And while I was in the air, all the airports in the whole, from the Mississippi River to New York, that's half the nation, every airport closed. Closed. Because it was too cold. And all electricity in most places was finished. And water, there was no water available because the water was freezing in the pipes. And meanwhile, we were in the sky, and the petrol was running out. We had to land somewhere, but all the airports were closed. So we had to go somewhere way, way out of the way. Absolutely a different direction from what we were going. This tiny little airport just to land. And then right after we landed, they closed that airport. We're stuck. In this way, when it's too cold, everything stops. So you can imagine, this is just a little bit of the coldness sent by some of the devatas. But the Narayana Jwara is when Krishna wants it to be cold. Directly, personally, as a weapon. You can't imagine. So the Shiva Jwara was totally defeated. He just surrendered to the Narayana Jwara. And then Shiva himself surrendered to Krishna. I am your servant. I am helpless before you. I am defeated. But please be merciful to this Banasura. So Shiva was defeated by Krishna.
And even Lord Brahma,
when he stole the calves and the cowherd boys, he wanted to see, what is this power of Krishna? How is this Krishna killing Agasura so effortlessly?
So Krishna expanded himself
to become every cow, calf, and every calf and gopa. And when Brahma saw it, he was just, he couldn't believe it. How is this possible? And then when he saw every calf and every little boy, and there were tens and thousands, hundreds and thousands of them, they all turned into Lord Narayans. And then Brahma, with all of his intelligence, he's the guru of everyone in this world, but with all of his intelligence, he was completely like blank, mystified, bewildered. And then he understood that Krishna, like a firefly, thinks he's giving off great light in the pitch dark of the night, but when the sun rises, no one even sees the light of the firefly. In the darkness of ignorance, forgetful of you, I was thinking I am a great creator. But in your presence, I realize I am insignificant. I am nothing. And whatever I have is yours. There are so many wonderful stories. Even Mahavishnu, Shukadeva Goswami, when he wants to glorify Krishna, he glorifies in such a way that he is the one without a second. We were discussing Mahavishnu, who is an expansion of an expansion of an expansion of a plenary portion of Krishna. And Mahavishnu, he just, in his yoga nidra rest, he just exhales and so many universes are coming, and by his glance in each universe, he is impregnating so many living beings. But Mahavishnu stole the sons of a Brahman. This one Brahman, every time he was having children, they would die. And ultimately Arjuna said, I vow, you are saying that Ugrasena is useless because your children are dying. I vow if your next son dies, I will enter fire. And Arjuna was great. He had already defeated so many devatas. He had weapons given by devatas. Who could possibly take anything from him if he stood outside the maternity ward with his Gandiva bow, daring anyone to try to come and disturb this birth. Vigilantly guarding. And then what happened is all the mother started crying. And the Brahman came out crying and he said, my son has died, Arjuna. You are useless. What is the use of all your big, big words of promises and assurances? Now you have to go into fire. So Krishna, he always protects his devotees. So Krishna was Arjuna's chariot driver. And they weren't searching for the child. And ultimately, Krishna, he took Arjuna not only beyond all the planets of the demigods, they went from Bhuloka to Bhuvarloka to Swargaloka, Janaloka, Maharloka, Tapaloka, Satyaloka. Within very short amount of time, Krishna went beyond that to the very shore bound through all the 8 layers, coverings of material nature. And then beyond that, he entered into the causal ocean. And then beyond that, he went right before Mahavishnu, this immense, immense form of Godhead. And when Mahavishnu saw Krishna, he offered his obeisances. He surrendered. He said, my Lord, I have performed this pastime just because I was so anxious to have your darshan. You are my source, you are my Lord, you are everything.
So all the energies of the Lord are always absorbed in his loving service. This is Krishna. And how Krishna is effortlessly, as everything is going on, all the universes and all the creation, they are all going on so systematically, and he has so many in each universe. What is it? 33 million demigods in each universe. And there's quadrillions of quadrillions. What's higher than quadrillion? Panchdrillion? I don't know. Sadrillion? There's so many universes. Innumerable. They would appear like infinity to us. And Krishna is personally supervising all the demigods of all the universes through his various energies. And yet, what's Krishna doing? In Goloka Vrindavan, he's not doing any work. He's just playing. He's dancing. He's stealing butter. He's playing his flute. He's dancing with the gopis. He's dancing with the gopas. He's simply enjoying Rasa Raj, Rasa Bihari. How is this? Someone is the director of some government agency. How much he has to work to maintain, and so much anxieties over those people who he is managing to make sure they're not corrupt and everything else. It's very difficult. Or the leader of a company, however many people you have working under you, you have to so much energy. But Krishna, he's not worried. He's not in an office. He doesn't have fax machines or computers or telephones in Goloka Vrindavan reporting to him what's happening in each universe and what difficulties there are. Ras Bihari, he's just dancing and chanting with his devotees, and everyone in Goloka Vrindavan is just having wonderful, wonderful fun chanting the holy name. This is Krishna. This is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is all-powerful, who through his energies and through his representations and through his expansions, everything is happening. And as it is explained here, and it is so carefully described in such great detail by Srila Jiva Goswami and our acharyas, that Krishna is simultaneously one and different from every living entity and from all of the energies and everything within his creation. And to understand Krishna in this light is the highest, purest, most enlightening, transcendental knowledge. And Maharaj Parikshit knows this. And just by hearing from Krishna, hearing from the source of a sincere and purified devotee in disciplic succession, the glories of Krishna, one can realize the greatness and the glory of Krishna. One can have direct experience of unalloyed love for Krishna, the ultimate perfection of life, just by attentively and eagerly hearing his wonderful glories and chanting his holy names. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Ram. Sri Krishna Bhagavan ki, Sri Prabhupada ki, Ananti Gauri Vaishnav Vrinda ki, Gopi Manandi. Thank you very much.